It's Current State on 90.5 WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. We were first introduced to drones by the United States military, which has been using them for years, sometimes controversially, in places like Afghanistan, northern Pakistan, and Yemen. But like many other technologies that have been pioneered by the military, such as computers, duct tape, and GPS, drones have numerous commercial applications, and one of the biggest sectors where drones could become a game changer is in agriculture. Still in its early stages, with many technological, legal, and public safety concerns to be ironed out, drone technology and uses in agriculture are on the rise. Bruno Basso is a professor who studies crop modeling and land use sustainability at MSU's Kellogg Biological Station, and he's been using a drone in his research. Professor Basso first described what the basic technology looks like.
In simple words, they're small devices. They vary in sizes and capabilities, but small helicopters for people to understand, and they are completely automated. They take off and land on their own. They have a pre-programmed flight, and they take pictures on predetermined points of interest of an agricultural field.
And what do we learn from those pictures?
There are a lot of information associated with an image. Besides, obviously, the visual, that you will see differences on the visible bands, you will learn about possibly the amount of nitrogen or fertilizer that the plants have taken up. If a plant is water-stressed, if it lacks water, and all this information are very useful because a drone, I always say, it's an eye in the sky. It basically, things seen from above are completely different from the one seen on the side.
Uh-huh. So do we get all this information visually from images that the drone takes?
Well, there is a version of the image that you can see, as we call a visual, a regular photography. The value of the imagery doesn't lay in the visual necessarily, because for each image that is taken by the drone, there are thousands and thousands of numbers associated with that picture. And we're obviously interested in analyzing those numbers. And through the analysis of those numbers, we learn about how a plant reflects the light, and all this kind of analysis basically leads us to identifying the causes of variation in a field, whether it's nitrogen stress or pests or presence of weeds, or again, lack of water in some areas of the field compared to others.
Now, I understand Michigan State has its own drone that you are using for research purposes. Describe that for us.
Yes, that's correct. It's about a year ago, I did quite a bit of research in identifying one of the most powerful system, and so I purchased a quadropter. Basically has four arms and propellers. He's highly sophisticated. He's equipped with three sensors, a multispectral camera, a thermal camera, and a radar, a laser scanner. So each of these sensors provide different type of information that we use for our research.
Is a lot of training required to pilot one of these or make it?
We had to, we did take a train, courses from the company just to learn how to fly the system. Because the UAV is completely unmanned and flies on its own, we had to learn how to use the software. So the pre-programming of the flight, it's very important. Then there are regulations, from the FAA that, restrict some kinds of flying. And so that's another sorts of training. But in terms of using the drone, it's rather easy because it's completely automated. But as long as the pre-planned and the programming done in my office, basically, is done correctly, then the drone is extremely independent and very safe.
How many farmers or people involved in agribusiness are using drones now?
In the last few years, there is a tremendous interest in agriculture. I mean, I receive several phone calls just on a regular basis, weekly basis sometimes, from either crop advisors or farmers wanting to know what is the best drone for them, you know, to purchase or to use. And so that obviously that's not a straightforward answer to that question, because it depends on what he wants to do and the availability of cost. And so a number will be hard to associate, because sometimes they buy and there is not necessarily a record for. What is also impressive is the numbers of companies that have just been created in the last couple of years that deliver, you know, imagery through the drones for a per acre cost basis.
So it's not so much an individual farmer purchasing a drone. It's a company that purchases maybe the more that they have the means to purchase the larger unit, like what you have at Michigan State, and they just contract with individual farmers.
Yes, that will be the, I would say, the predominant case where company, you know, will provide flyovers. But because this system are really fancy and they're almost like toys, so some of the large farmers have an interest in buying their own, because the area is so big that they could just basically afford it and just fly over their own farm. So there is a combination of two. The companies delivers more of a service, you know. There is a map associated with you know, the image, but the difficulties in this business is still the interpretation of the data, and that's what my research lab. I have a graduate student, Ryan Nagelkirk, working on this as his PhD. And we're really trying to make sense of all this complexity associated with the numbers in delivering an actionable, you know, management plan for the farmers that leads into something that they will do differently. We're not interested in showing a beautiful pictures that they can put in their, you know, on the wall.
We're talking to Bruno Basso, professor of geological sciences here at Michigan State University. Bruno's also affiliated with the Kellogg Biological Station. We're talking about drones in agriculture. Bruno, is the day coming when seeing a drone hovering over a cornfield here in mid-Michigan, is the day coming when that will be a common sight, do you think?
That day is very close. I mean, it's happening. Obviously, I fly over several fields, mostly associated with research projects, but some of the land is owned by farmers. So that day is really close.
And I know there's a lot of regulatory discussion going on right now that involves the Federal Aviation Administration. What are regulations like for the use of drones?
It's an interesting subject, the regulation, because the FAA, which is, you know, the organization that regulates basically the airspace, just so many news have been, you know, coming on just on the air in general and radio, that some judges basically have declined, you know, the possible penalties that the FAA, you know, could give to people, because there are two different types of regulation. A private citizen can fly in drone for, as we call the hobbyist, you know, hobby, without any regulation or permission. Mm-hmm. But if they're used for either research or commercial applications, and then they need a regulation, then there is an additional confusion. That's what they call a gray area, where if it's flown underneath 300 feet, initially that area was, you know, basically public space. Now the FAA has said basically below 80 feet, that area, airspace belongs to the owner of the land, and above 300 feet is obviously airspace for airplanes and other. So the space in between, where most of the drones, not necessarily mine, flies, it's gray area, it's unregulated. So soon they will come out either with complete removal of you know, any possible fines, or make a a pretty sets of regulation that people should obey to. So at the moment, we have received the approval to fly. So we had to apply for what's called the COA, the Certificate of Approval, and that takes long time. So I think the FAA is really overwhelmed with application from the commercial companies and researchers. So there's still a gray area. There's not just...
But the farmers that you get these phone calls from on a regular basis, are you under the impression that they go out and they purchase a less expensive drone?
Yes, but with the current regulation, they can, because they're considered a hobbyist and they fly over their own field.
If the regulations change, that could change.
That's right.
Yeah. In terms of everything happening in agriculture, where does drone technology fit in? How important is this to the future of agriculture, do you think?
I think it is extremely important because the sizes of the farms get bigger and bigger. There is a predominant, basically a norm, I say, of presence of spatial variability that plants are exposed to heterogeneous soil conditions and position in the landscape that lead to different yields in the end, productions. And so currently the management of input, it's still pretty much uniform. Farmers will apply the same amount of fertilizer in a field, but is fully aware that plants take up different amount in different zones. So the research that we carry on, which falls within the umbrella of precision agriculture, allows farmers to basically tailor the inputs, which leads to significant improvements both in profitability, because they could make more money by putting less fertilizer. And in areas where there is a response to fertilizer, they can have a yield boost, a yield increase. So there's both an economic and an environmental, component to that. And our system particularly, which don't other researchers necessarily haven't got into that, it's linking space and time, which I define basically, the drone technology with system models, crop production models that we have developed in order to see the scenarios. What if I put 100 kilograms of nitrogen, what would be the yield before I even do it, before I even apply? So basically the prediction.
We've been talking to Bruno Basso. Bruno is a professor of geological sciences and is affiliated with Kellogg Biological Station here at Michigan State University. We've been talking about drones in agriculture. Bruno, thank you.
It is a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
And this segment is supported by Michigan State University's Knight Center for Environmental Journalism. More news about the Great Lakes environment can be found at greatlakesecho.org and on Current State every Tuesday.